C1A. Number 4A.
Well, I rushed a little bit through that first subject, but it doesn't matter because I like you to think it over yourself, and next time I may take more time to consider it. Just keep the main tone in mind that the first subject is presenting the law of atonement. He starts by that Jesus showed it how to do up to the last subtone where it says that if we practice it, we have part and we are in God. So it fulfills the whole range first of being awakened that there is a possibility of atonement to the last point of being atoned. And how does Jesus show that? See, it's the fundamental law of atonement which comes again and again through the chapter. It's showing and presenting that law of atonement first as the law of an activity. Jesus acted boldly, boldly. Again, see, against the testimony of the physical senses, against Pharisaical law and practices, and he refuted them through his life sense with his power of healing. So he showed it for us to do it too. So the second tone comes and says, but in which direction should that bold activity be directed? And so the subtone of spirit unfolds that law of activity into the direction of man to God, and never God to man. It's the reconciliating, and you say that, or reconciling activity. It's the atoning activity of man with God. But then it says, but on what power should this reconciliation be based? And it says, Saul says, well, always the higher will control the lower. So in approaching to God, we can see that we must use that higher sense of God as the atoning power and atoning activity. And so we are redeemed from the lower law. Speaks there that we are redeemed from the law of matter. Using the higher to control the lower, we ask ourselves always then, but how far? In some details or entirely? And principle always comes in and says, I sound through everything. I'm the divine person. I sound through every detail. And so Jesus forbore not to speak the whole truth. And says that this law of atonement must atone every part of our being, of our human being. And that it is the divine that will atone, that the human must atone with the divine. And never should we expect that the divine will atone with the human. Then, if principle reaches every department, every phase of life, we can see that this law of atonement is sustained and aided and helped by every detail of our life. Therefore, by every pang of repentance and suffering, by every good thought and deed, by every effort to reform, that aids and aids and aids, and that lifts us into that higher understanding where we begin to understand the deeper meaning of Jesus' atonement and of atonement itself. Then, doing that and doing that and doing that, we come to the point of truth that we are that. By doing it, we are it. And so man has part in the at-one-ment. He is doing actually the will of wisdom, the will of mind. He actually manifests the Christ mind. And then, lastly, he says, and doing the will of wisdom, he is held in God. He is part in God. He takes part in God. And that doing that, I would have liked, yes, to stress one little point, which she says that there, those who cannot demonstrate, at least in part, the divine principle of the teaching, have no part in God. From my experience, many students are a bit shattered by that sentence. They feel, I'm not demonstrating yet enough, and so I am shut out from having part in God. And by saying that they don't demonstrate yet in part, it is because they feel they don't yet raise the dead and have instantaneous healings of this and that incurable disease. Well, that's wonderful to have such a high goal, and it is the high goal. But let us also remember what Kenji mean at this stage of development. At this stage where she has only up to now presented the chapter on prayer and a little bit of atonement. Doesn't demonstrate here mean to demonstrare, to show forth what? To show forth that which we have learned up to now. That's also a demonstration. I think it's a very big demonstration. I think it's a wonderful big demonstration to show forth a real prayer. That prayer which we perhaps have summarized yesterday afternoon. I think that's a big demonstration. A demonstrare. It isn't yet the full sense of demonstration as we get in the chapter on practice and later on, but it's fitted and adapted to the point where we are now in the unfoldment of the textbook. And I feel that every demonstrare, to every showing forth of the first prayer, second prayer, the third prayer, the fourth prayer, the fifth and sixth and the seventh prayer, if we show forth that actively as the first atonement, subject of atonement, of acting boldly in that spirit, this demonstration, it isn't yet the fullest. And that's why she says, those who cannot demonstrate, at least in part, the divine principle of this teaching and practice of our Master have no part in God. We must see that we don't depress ourselves too much, and that we value the values we have, and support and sustain the values we have. And here, I think, we must value very much if we can show forth actively a true prayer, and that is already helping us to take part in God, because the prayer has given us the way to God already. And I'm sure, as the later chapters then show, that if we build slowly and lovingly on the little demonstrations, the bigger will come naturally and more spontaneously. Now, let me go to the second subject of spirit. The first subject postulated the law of atonement. Now, the question now comes, well, is that law of atonement my God, or do I have other laws beside it? Do I have other devotion beside it? Do I find there are other gods to which I should devote myself? Have we other gods? Have we other masters? Have we another goal? I think that last one is the most important one. Is there another goal? Is there another purpose than to work out the law of atonement? And so spirit comes in and must purify that law of atonement. So the second subject gives us a very great sense of purification. That in that subject, spirit demands the substantiation of the law of atonement. That law of atonement becomes the only law, and not just one law next to other laws. That it becomes the only law. And it is a very, very crucial step. I always feel the second step is a crucial step. Once that step has been taken and we go forward, then the herald thought can come and can no more kill us. Then we are more than 2 years old. How does she show this substantiation of the law of atonement? It is shown here as a purification through turning away from another goal and turning solely and entirely, step by step, gradually, patiently to the one and only goal, spirit. And that tone goes right through it. It is constantly a sense of turning away from another goal and constantly turning to the one and only goal, spirit. So the epitome of this subject may be that we can say that spirit, the nature of spirit, impels spiritualization. How? Through taking part in the good. Or we could say that that spirit impels spiritualization through the Eucharist, namely through turning away from another goal. That we don't set another goal as the main goal and only goal. Spirit, so to say, impels us now to work in the right direction. You see, the first subject presented the law of atonement. Spirit now purifies that law of atonement by setting that law of atonement onto a pure goal and shows how we can work towards that pure goal. And so in this way cleanses us from the belief in duality. It doesn't yet deal with duality as such. Only the chapter on Christian Science versus Spiritualism begins to deal with duality as such. But before one can deal with duality as such, one first has to deal with the belief in duality. Here with the belief that there is more than one goal which is worthwhile to attain. That there is more than one goal which is worthwhile to work for. Here comes the singleness of purpose which says there is only one goal, and that's turning towards the spiritual, to the spiritual ultimate. But it's very nice in this subject again that she doesn't force in the least the reader to do more than what he can. And when you read it through, and one of my questions is in that way, you will see that practically in every subtone she hints that this way to the ultimate goal called spirit is a way that should be taken slowly, gradually, day by day, with patience, and therefore there is no forced rush. It's again a gentle development. Now let us see how this ultimate goal, spirit, is to be reached. We so easily say and wish in our heart that we reach the ultimate goal called spirit. But with wishing it, we don't have it. There is a way to go, an actual way to go, a practical, living, actual way, a way which every hour and every minute brings us an opportunity to go. No matter if we are a businessman or a farmer or a housewife or a Christian Science practitioner, whatever we are, that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter in the least. Metaphysics only appeals to divine qualities. Doesn't ask who you are and where you are and what you are. So what is that active way which again is impregnated with that sense of soul, principle, life, which is willing to give up a sinful sense, a false attitude, a false human sense of a life career, and is willing to be pushed into that new life of which we may not even know the form of it. And so, through the subtones, we get that ordered way. She begins with the tone of mind by saying that Jesus urged the commandment, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me." You see at once the change of tone. "Thou shalt have no other gods before me." The second statement in the commandments is symbolizing spirit. But it is a command. Mind commands. "Thou shalt know no evil," you see, "for there is one life." "He rendered unto Caesar the things which are Caesar's, and unto God which are God's. But then, at last, he paid no homage to forms of doctrine or theories of men, but acted and spake as he was moved by spirit." Now, if we would have time, all these subtones are so full of practical interest. But there is a Christ, and I believe that if we can pray aright, that all that I would like to say, the Christ will tell you also. A more precisely and clearly when you study these things during the next week. Here, just some nice points. Jesus gave to Caesar the things which were Caesar's, and to God which were God's. But at the end of his life, he did no more give homage. He paid no homage anymore at last, at the end. But at the beginning, he gave to Caesar what was Caesar. It gives us again a sense, you see, that says that way from to the oneness of spirit, the onlyness of spirit, begins first by separating truly and attributing to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, but also giving to God what belongs to God. And then, little by little, step by step, we work out of that concession, until at last we will see in the tone of love, we reach the onlyness and unity of spirit. Giving things to Caesars which are Caesars doesn't make Caesar a god. See, it's a very different thing if we give to Caesar the things which are Caesar's by thinking that is a help, or that is the way of salvation, or if we just give him because it is a concession at the moment, but not attributing to it any saving power or any power of help. That's the difference. We live still in a material world where we have to give to Caesar a lot, but we can give to Caesar the things which belong to Caesar without our heart, so to say, without that we think that that is a way of salvation, that that is doing anything in the line of spiritual evolution. Only spiritual things are worthwhile of spiritual evolution. So we attribute things to Caesar which belong to him, without making a god to him. That's the crux, of the situation. But, and then at last, you see, at last, he paid no homage. He grew out of it. And that's what will happen with us too. Then we come to spirit as spirit, showing that the atonement demands an act of inward purification and not a ritualistic worship. That a change of heart gets us any further. See, here it's all about that ritualistic worship is no true inward worship. That ritualistic worship, like baptism, partaking of the Eucharist, supporting the clergy, observance of the Sabbath, making long prayers, that doesn't bring us nearer spirit. That doesn't have the strength of unfoldment, power of unfoldment. But that only that inward purification, that the inward worship really brings that law of evolution into activity. It's there where she says that to the ritualistic priesthood and hypocritical Pharisee, Jesus said, the publicans and the harlots go into the kingdom of heaven before you. It shows that the preconceived mind, like the Pharisees, that they have difficulties in getting into the kingdom of heaven because they are stubbornly holding to their doctrines, whereas the publicans and the harlots, they are usually much more willing to change their heart. But when faced with the situation, there is much more hope of change of heart. Shows it is an inward attitude. And to see that the inward attitude is not rigid, but that it is willing to worship spiritually. Then, how long shall we worship spiritually? Shall we worship spiritually only as long as it is easy to do it? Or shall we do it if it is opposed against the physical sense testimony? And so we come to soul. And shows in the next paragraph that atonement really demands adherence, strict adherence, sticking to the God, good, to the spiritual. That Jesus swerved not. That he knew that he has to obey the divine order. That he knew that he had to stick to the divine order. Can you hear the tone of soul? To sticking to it. Soul is always sticking to it, adhering to it, holding fast to it, not wavering, see, not swerving, holding fast to it, even if infirmities beset us, even if there is opposition. That brings us spiritward. See, well, so often we see that the student loves the spiritual as long as it finds no opposition, as long as it is not rejected. But Jesus was, as it says there, despised and rejected of men. But he returned blessing for cursing. He swerved not. He knew that he had to obey the divine order. See now how the sturdiness and the strength and the toughness of the spiritual evolution comes in, where we just can't give in, where in our devotion spiritward we can't swerve. Then we go on to principle, where again we come, as before in the subtone of principle, to the question, does that apply just generally, or does it apply in every detail? Principle always sounds through every detail. That's the person, the personare. And here she says, material belief is slow to acknowledge what the spiritual fact implies. The truth is the center of all religion, but it commands sure entrance into the realm of love. You see, perhaps you have some difficulty in seeing the tone of principle in it, but it's one of the most pregnant points of, can you say pregnant points? Yes, pregnant points of principle. Principle is not only the center of everything. Principle always reduces itself to a system. Principle is always that which expresses itself through every idea, through every detail. Therefore, it is in one way the center which opens up the whole realm. Here she says, material belief is slow to acknowledge what the spiritual fact implies. We acknowledge usually what the principle as such implies in metaphysics, what the principle as such states in metaphysics. But hardly, or the difficulty comes in when we ask ourselves, what does it imply? What does this principle imply? What is the whole realm and range of this principle? That's why afterwards she says, the truth is the center of all religion, but it also commands sure entrance into the whole realm.